The closeness of Christmas to Nancy Clutter's birthday, which was right after New Year's, had always created problems for her boyfriend, Bobby Rupp. It had strained his imagination to think of two suitable gifts in such quick succession. But each year, with money made working summers on his father's sugar beet farm, he had done the best he could, and on Christmas morning he had always hurried to the Clutter house, carrying a package that his sisters had helped him wrap and that he hoped would surprise Nancy and delight her. Last year he had given her a small heart-shaped gold locket. This year, as four-handed as ever, he'd been wavering between the imported perfumes on sale at Norris Drugs and a pair of riding boots. But then Nancy had died. On Christmas morning, instead of racing off to River Valley Farm, he remained at home, and later in the day he shared with his family the splendid dinner his mother had been a week preparing. Everybody, his parents and every one of his seven brothers and sisters, had treated him gently since the tragedy. All the same, at mealtimes he was told again and again that he must please eat. No one comprehended that really he was ill, that grief had made him so, that grief had drawn a circle around him he could not escape from and others could not enter, except possibly Sue. Until Nancy's death, he had not appreciated Sue, never felt altogether comfortable with her. She was too different, took seriously things that even girls ought not to take very seriously. Paintings, poems, the music she played on the piano. And, of course, he was jealous of her. Her position in Nancy's esteem, though of another order, had been at least equal to his. But that was why she was able to understand his loss. Without Sue, without her almost constant presence, how could he have withstood such an avalanche of shocks? The crime itself, his interviews with Mr. Dewey, the pathetic irony of being for a while the principal suspect. Then, after about a month, the friendship waned. Bobby went less frequently to sit in the Kidwells' tiny, cozy parlor, and when he did go, Sue seemed not as welcoming. The trouble was that they were forcing each other to mourn and remember what, in fact, they wanted to forget. Sometimes Bobby could. When he was playing basketball or driving his car over country roads at 80 miles an hour, or when, as part of a self-imposed athletic program, his ambition was to be a high school gymnastics instructor, he took long-distance jog trots across flat yellow fields. And now, after helping clear the dining table of all its holiday dishes, that was what he decided to do. Put on a sweatshirt and go for a run. The weather was remarkable. Even for western Kansas, renowned for the longevity of its Indian summers, the current sample seemed far-fetched. Dry air, bold sun, azure sky. Optimistic ranchers were predicting an open winter, a season so bland that cattle could graze during the whole of it. Such winters are rare, but Bobby could remember one. The year he had started to court Nancy. They were both 12, and after school he used to carry her book satchel the mile separating the Holcomb schoolhouse from her father's farm ranch. Often, if the day was warm and sun-kindled, they stopped along the way and sat by the river, a snaky, slow-moving, brown piece of the Arkansas. Once Nancy had said to him, "One summer, when we were in Colorado, I saw where the Arkansas begins. The exact place. You wouldn't believe it, though, that it was our river. It's not the same color, but pure as drinking water, and fast. And full of rocks, whirlpools. Daddy caught a trout." It had stayed with Bobby, her memory of the river's source, and since her death. Well,